Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we visit with Mr. Jeff Pettit, Webster County beef producer and president-elect of the Kentucky Cattlemen's Association. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy our show. Hello, Vicki.
Good morning, Jay. How are you?
I am doing the best. It's Friday.
It is.
November.
It seemed like it took a long time to get to Friday this week for some reason.
Those two things are always good. I like the fall of the year. I told my wife I was listening to a podcast on the way up here this morning, and the guy said that if he could get rid of July and August in Kentucky and trade it for two Decembers, he'd be better off. And I told her, I said, I'd take one November and one December if it was up to me. So.
Yeah, well, I will say, you know, it's this fall. I know we didn't necessarily have fall weather, a long time of fall weather, what we hear like that, you know, that 65, 70, you know, nice weather. We didn't have a lot of days of that. But I think the color this year, the fall colors really were as pretty this year as I can remember in many, many years.
I would agree.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff, I think I saw a picture. You had posted a picture out across your farm, the cattle farm, and the trees, the tree line in the back, and the color. It was just absolutely beautiful. And you know, just traveling up the parkways, going to Bowling Green a couple of times, it was just a beautiful fall color. So,
you know, unfortunately, I think one of the reasons we've had this color persist as long as it has is there's a lot of places it's dry.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the drought map right now for this upper mid-south area of Tennessee and Kentucky, there's a lot of dry areas. Yes. And we've held on to the leaves longer than normal because we hadn't had any wind or rain. I think that's fixing to change. Some of it already changed a little bit last week. We've lost a lot of the leaves that we had. But I think after we get through this next round of storms coming the first of this next week, be Thanksgiving week, I think we'll see a lot of our leaves start to disappear.
I agree. And as much as we don't like humidity and all of that, I think one of the best parts about where we live, though, is we still do have those four seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I enjoy all four of them. I'm usually ready for it to change, but when the time comes for the new season, I'm usually ready for it. But I don't know how well I would like living in a place that you didn't have different seasons. But, you know, you just never know.
The older I get, I understand why the snowbirds go south in the wintertime,
right,
though.
Yes. Well, David's not with us today, so it's just Jay and I as far as the host today. And David does not like cold weather at all. And so
I agree.
He would not be happy with two Decembers or even two November and Decembers, I don't think, Jay.
I was so tickled with the concept, I muted my radio and called my wife. I said, how would that work? I said, couldn't we have two Decembers? And I could hear her rolling her eyes over the phone.
You know, so in David's defense, he does have cattle to feed in the wintertime.
That's right.
As I do. Yes. So that kindly gives you a little different look on wintertime, I think.
There was a time when I did not look as fondly on 0-degree weather. Now, January and February, basically, into December and whatnot. But.
Well, my dad had cattle, but not for very – I mean, I was old enough to remember cattle. But he got rid of them before I was ever, you know, I was still a small child. But I do remember, though, hearing my dad say in the wintertime a few times that he had to go bust up the ice.
Yep.
So he didn't enjoy that.
That's almost I won't say it's a foreign concept nowadays, but with a lot of these frost-proof hydrants and floatable water sources, we do a lot better job of keeping the water flowing than what we used to.
Yeah.
It's funny, some of that technology we was talking about earlier, Jay, how maybe it hadn't made life better. I think some of these waters and systems have truly improved that. Yeah. So.
I feel like my dad would have liked that.
Absolutely. So, got a guest with us today, Mr. Jeff Pettit. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are y'all? Good to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Glad to have you with us this morning. We're going to talk about a variety of different things, but for those that are listening and may not have had a chance to meet you or know you, won't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and where you call home and how you come to be in this part of the world?
Well, the story, my wife will argue with me a little bit, but I always say that somebody asked how you ended up in Kentucky. I say blonde hair and blue eyes would make, you know, somebody do a lot of crazy things. So, I met my wife in Alabama, which is where I'm from. And then we ended up back here in 1992 after we'd been married a couple years and started having our own family and moved back to her family farm here in Webster County. And that's been home ever since. And we've enjoyed it. It's been a good place to live. It's been a good county to be a part of. And
time frame wise, when did you come back to Kentucky?
1992.
So you're a Kentuckian just about at, yep, at this point.
I have spent probably the, at this point I hadn't really added up, but a larger percentage of my life has been in Kentucky than it was Alabama. So
well, we think of you as a Webster County native now. So even though you may have started in Alabama, he's been in Webster County long enough. We claim him as ours. And you know, he and his wife, they have two children, and both of his kids have been very active in 4-H. And so they came up, they started in 4-H here as Clover Buds and just stayed with it all the way. Particularly Nolan was actually on the team leadership council, I believe. And, you know, it's kind of neat. I've been here long enough now that it's really neat to be able to see these kids. I still call them kids, even though they're not, but you see them come through the doors here as 4-H'ers. And I just see them running up and down the hall or, you know, go in and peep in when they're doing a workshop or something. And you kind of get to know some of them, especially the farm kids, and you see them grow up and then they leave and go to college. And it's pretty neat when you can watch them come back or watch them when they've started their career. And you've been able to see the benefits of 4-H and FFA and just being involved in those kinds of organizations and really getting a firm foundation under them, really.
Right.
And your kids have certainly done that.
In that instance, I guess you really get to see it almost on a regular basis because Jeff's son, Nolan, is a 4-H agent in McLean County.
That's
in,
right.
In the neighboring counties. So.
Yeah, he works with David, actually. So, and that's kind of neat. You know, I know Wade was Nolan's 4-H agent.
Right.
So it's neat when you can start to see that. And not only were his kids, you know, active in 4-H, Jeff and Michelle, have also been volunteers. Mm-hmm. And so they've really been a benefit and for our 4-H program and in extension too. I mean, he and Michelle both have been leaders here for all of us. So we appreciate that.
Got two granddaughters now that's coming up into the 4-H program. So, and they're enjoying it.
I saw them this week, I believe.
Yes,
I think,
yesterday.
Yes, I was going to say, I think I've seen them here and doing some workshops here this week. So good stuff.
So you've got a little bit of history working with 4-H and working with that. We'll get to talking about KCA specifically in a little while, but as far as leadership roles in different organizations, talk a little bit about maybe some that you've held and how you come to be in some of those roles.
Well, I think I'll take how I come to be in them is the first part of that question. And I was just lucky enough to be asked and dumb enough to not say no, I guess, because
I like that description. That's good.
I've been fortunate to serve in several organizations, whether it was Extension, and probably it's all started, honestly, with the Extension Council here in Webster County. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of worked out from there. And I know Vicki was talking earlier, probably back in the early 2000s, we kind of decided we needed a cattleman's organization here in the county and started working on that. And so that's where my journey kind of with KCA started. And then from there, I mean, it's been Farm Bureau and just different ones. And Jay, I think that, you know, the old adage is that we find things that we like to do in life, and we got to try to find ways to give back, you know, and help them be better. And probably I've never had a lot of habits or hobbies or anything other than agriculture and some type of farming all my life. And that's kind of been my passion, I guess, so to speak, is, you know, involved in agriculture and trying to promote that and make it better for our producers, but also, you know, to the consumer, I think today really just doesn't realize how closely they're connected to agriculture, you know, and everybody says, well, if you eat, you're involved in agriculture. And we get that, you know, as producers, but mm-hmm. I think a lot of the consumers, you know, they don't get that. And how can we do a better, that's one of the things, how can we do a better job today to help get that message out there and help them understand, you know, that agriculture is important to everybody.
And you're right. And to be quite honest, I know I can only speak for me, but I mean, really, probably one of the main priorities that any of us ag agents should be working on, or at least part of it, is that ag literacy piece. Mm-hmm. And but I think you said it right. We know that. We know those things, and we just take for granted that other people do too. But it is a huge responsibility of us in the ag industry, be it folks that are active full-time farmers or in some kind of education like we are, or ag retail, or be it whatever arena that you're in. We all have that, I guess, duty to make sure that we are telling the story of agriculture, and not only how it affects those of us that work in the ag community, but more particularly the ones that don't.
Right.
It's been one of the things that I know in my career in Extension, which is getting close to 30 years now, be starting my 29th year before too long, it's something that has been evolving as time has gone by, but it seems like it has not moved as quickly maybe during the first 20 years of my career as it has the last 10. You see a lot more people involved now, whether it's involved with local groups like a local cattlemen's mm-hmm. association. We have, especially here in the state of Kentucky, we've had a lot of leaders go on and serve at that national level with different organizations. And that's really, really, I feel like, kindly put the spotlight on our end of the state, or on Kentucky in general.
Sure.
When it comes to that type of growth. There is a lot of separation. There's a lot of hands in the ag industry between the farmer and the consumer. And a lot of those hands do not do anything to differentiate an ag product from anything else. But the farmers now are more and more involved, I feel like, in getting out and helping to promote and tell that message.
Oh, I think so, too. And I think that, I mean, just going back to my dad, you know, he farmed, and that's what he did. He farmed. He didn't, you know, it wasn't something that, you know, he ever thought about, you know, the consumer side necessarily. I mean, I'm sure he did it. And at some level you do, but, you know, he grew up farming, and that's what he did. You know, he was working. He was in the field working. But nowadays, and Jeff, you're a great example of that, is you're a farmer, you're a cattle farmer, but you also know that for you to be successful, you've got to try to connect the consumer with the producer, because for to be successful, those two have to have a connection. And some of the decisions that you're going to make as a farmer is going to be based on the consumer side, because you got something to sell.
Right.
And if you want that product to move, you're going to have to, it's going to have to be a product that consumers are going to want to buy.
You know, case in point, their food at one time sold itself. Everybody had to eat. Nobody thought a lot about what they ate. There wasn't a lot of options out there. And I'm talking years past. But as our ag industry has grown, food options have grown. They've evolved. They've become very, very detailed in the things that you can get with or without when it comes to certain types of food products. Folks' diets have changed, whether it's for health reasons or for whatever reason. They, you know, folks have a variety of options out there. And because of that, you know, at one time, I still think the vast majority of our public is or are price point shoppers. So they're going to go to the grocery store. They're going to look at their options. They're going to figure out what they can do on their budget and be it at that. But even within that scope, farmers getting out and telling their story and promoting their product is what helps that consumer say, okay, well, I don't have to just have hamburgers tonight with this ground beef. I might be able to put it in some type of casserole. Or the big thing I think of is a flat iron steak. It had a different name for a lot of years and never was derived out and marketed as such. But because of its price and because of its ease, really, relative ease of cooking, it's something that the average consumer can take into a whole lot with, where in the past, they didn't really.
Right. And I think there is definitely a connection. When you can make that connection from the farm, so to speak, to the plate, I know that's an adage that we hear a lot, but the consumer to the producer is one I will use. That consumer has a whole new outlook on where their food comes from and the relevance of it, because there's so much in marketing today on TV and the drama that's associated with all that. Now, I think, unfortunately, it paints a little bit of a negative picture in the consumer's eyes sometimes.
It does.
And they lose fact that, hey, you know, it's normal everyday people out here working the land, taking care of the livestock, trying to produce food so that people that live in New York or Bowling Green or Lexington, you know, have the opportunity, you know, to enjoy, you know, nutritious meals. And I'm not one that really looks for opportunities to get out there and talk to those people, but I realize that's an important step that we've got to do a better job of, and as ag producers, and try to help have conversations in the background, so to speak, that help facilitate those a lot of times.
But I do think you are a part of an organization that is a voice for agriculture,
sure,
though. So you may not be the person that is on the front line talking, Jeff, but because of your willingness to serve, you are, you know, at the helm of these organizations that is that voice, that is telling that story, that is trying to make that connection. And that started for here. It started at the ground level when we met at the Dixon Community Center back 22 years ago and had a group of cattle farmers in there and said, you know, do y'all think we need to form a cattlemen's association? And for that to form, though, we had to have cattle producers that was willing to step up and say, yes, and I'm willing to take on a role.
Right.
And you were one of those people here. And you know, Jeff, if you think about the impact that just at the local level, just the impact that the Webster County Cattlemen's Association has had since the beginning, it's tremendous.
Pretty huge.
It is for little old Webster County. And I mean, and you were at the ground level of getting that started, you and some other folks.
Right.
There was a team of folks.
Right.
And, but had that not happened, all of that impact that association has had here wouldn't have happened. And I'll brag on one of the things that they started was those beef vouchers. And our Cattlemen's Association, back in the early, I mean, you were still involved, I believe, when we...
I think that was when Keith Johnson was president, when
okay.
they worked with Farm Bureau and come up with the Christmas
there you go. Yeah.
Beef vouchers, and Townsend's Grocery Store
yes.
was a partner in making that happen, and, you know, worked with the
Family Resource Center.
Family Resource mm-hmm. Center. You know, mm-hmm. to identify families that could use those. And, you know, you talk about the beef vouchers, you talk about, I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking how many thousands of dollars worth of scholarships
right.
that they have awarded back to county students that mm-hmm. are going into, you know, agriculture. And so, you know, and that's one of the things when as a KCA representative, when we go to these counties, and, you know, you'll find different counties have different success levels. Some struggle, you know, to get people involved, and some have 400 or 500 members, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the questions I'm often asked is, you know, how do you get a county to become successful, so to speak? And one of the first recommendations that I give to those people is find a way to connect with your local community. Mm-hmm. What is a need locally that maybe isn't being met right now that the Cattlemen's Association could step in and make that connection? It might not even be directly related to beef production, mm-hmm. but it gives you the opportunity to connect with those local people. And I feel like that's very important in any of our organizations, not just the Cattlemen's. Mm-hmm. But when you can make a connection with your local community, with the local consumer, you know, then that gives you an opportunity to have these conversations that we're talking about, you know, what we do as producers and how that affects someone that's never even seen a tractor, maybe. And
that's just right. I agree.
You know, I think that helps. It gives the local chapters, whatever we want to call them, a purpose. Mm-hmm. But it also gives them, you know, something to work for. And you can always have opportunities to be involved in beef field days and training for better herding, you know, BQA and things like that. Right. But you've got to have that foundation, I think, locally, and that connection to the local community or population to really be successful. And, you know, we started out, Vicki, I think there was 10, 12 dozen mm-hmm. of us there at that first meeting, and now we have a county chapter that I think I looked last week, they're up around 80 members.
Yeah.
And they have an annual banquet each year where we have about 100 people show up at, and there's some training and some fun times and mm-hmm. some fundraising. And, you know, it has become, I think, something that a lot of people look forward to each year.
Oh, because they start calling me in, you know, early November, because it's always the 1st of December. And the cattle folks will start early November, sometimes late October. You know, they'll run into me somewhere and they'll say, have y'all set that date for the cattleman's dinner yet? I mean, I want to make sure I know when it is. And it has become something that folks look forward to. I think the Cattlemen's Association, it's been a way to retain membership mm-hmm. and then also recruit members. And to use that opportunity to show the folks that this money that's raised, it's turned right back in and put right back in the community.
Right.
And I think when you can make that connection at the local level, like you were talking about, when you can make that connection with your local people, it doesn't have to be money. It can be something else. You're feeling that need, like you spoke of, but you just basically are you're returning it back. You're right. Giving back to the community. And I think that's where you start to see organizations grow and be successful, because that's the mindset of the organization, and that's what they want to do.
I think we see a lot of people, and we hear that term giving back quite a bit. Seems like we hear it now more than ever. And we see more and more people doing just that, giving back to organizations. Obviously, it's because they believe in the organizations, they enjoy the organizations, but so many of them can look back and say, this is what that organization did for me when I was a younger producer. Mm-hmm. I think of some of the things that our cattlemen's associations have done, the local associations across the state, such as maybe putting up partial funds to buy some shared use equipment. Mm-hmm. I think about pasture aerators, I think about no-till drills, I think about working and handling facilities. Mm-hmm. And those are all those types of benefits that we get at our local association. When we think about that at the state level, all of those things are amplified, because usually somebody or a group of somebodies usually at the state level went to those other state level organizations and got that worked out so that we could do these things at right. the county mm-hmm. level, whether it's the Kentucky Office of Ag Policy, the partnership that they've had with KCA, University of Kentucky, and the partnership that they've had with KCA. Everybody benefits from that. And being able to give back at that local level, there's ways of giving back at that state level as well. And that's kind of what's leading you to the president-elect position, I guess. There's probably some steps along the way that you took that got you to that level. And talk just a little bit about those and maybe how you came to be there.
So it's been a, gosh, close to a 20-year journey, I guess, since we started on this. But the way the structure in KCA is set up, I'll just start this. We finished last year with our highest membership on record for the Kentucky Cattlemen Association, a little over 11,000 members in the state, representing producers from, you know, one end of the Commonwealth to the other. But that 11,000 members, then that gets broken down when you start talking about leadership. You know, there's ways you can serve at the county level, and then we have five different regions across the state where you can be involved in leadership there, and then work your way up through committee positions, mm-hmm. and all the way to the executive committee. But we have a board of directors that probably is made up of about, I was figuring on the way over here, about 1% of our membership. We have an actual board that's right at 100 members strong.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, our executive board is probably about 15, I think, is, and that's all mm-hmm. of our regionals and our committee chair people, and then, you know, whatnot, that kindly meet on a monthly basis, keep the organization, you know, kindly on focus, I guess, and work with staff and keeping programming going. But the full board comes together four times a year in full board meetings. It's throughout the state where all 100 board members can come together, you know, and have an opportunity to make decisions on behalf of the association and kind of set direction for next year and things we're wanting to focus on. And so it's truly a member grassroots organization. And some people say, well, why do you have so many board members? Well, I think that's part of what's made us successful, because we've got that many people across the state that are actively involved in the decision-making process. There's a level of transparency there that they can take back to all their counties. They know, you know, what we're doing, what we're spending money on, what staff is doing. And mm-hmm. and I think that's one of the things that has made us successful. It makes it hard sometimes to find a building to facilitate a board meeting, but it's good that we've got that many people that want to be involved, you know, and a part of the organization.
So I was doing some quick math. You said 11,000 members across the state. That's an average of almost 92 members per county, mm-hmm. with 120 counties. So we know certainly some are smaller and some are quite a bit bigger, but that's still, that's a great number to look at on average for across the state.
So I think we've got 99 current county chapters.
Okay.
Out of, what'd you say, 120
counties? 120
mm-hmm. counties. So we've got 99 you know, chapter. Some of those, we got a few that cover multiple counties.
That's what I was going to say. I've actually been in the Purchase Area Cattlemen's right. Association was one that I worked with when I was in Callaway County. I know in the southeast region of the state, they've got a multi-county cattlemen's mm-hmm. group. Same way in the far eastern, kind of north or central eastern part of the state, they've got that same thing. So a lot of counties involved, even if they don't have an individual county association.
Right. Over 100 of them.
You almost sure. have to have that. So many of those counties, just like Christian County, for instance, I used it as an example for a lot of years. Hopkinsville was a hub of activity. A lot of people came there to do their business, whether it was buying equipment, whether it was buying feed, they came there to do their business. We really see that in some of our extremely rural areas of the state, far eastern part of the state, places in the Purchase area, where people congregate other places other than just the county that they right. live in. So that's kind of what has driven the development and the growth of some of those multi-county groups.
Yes, sir.
For some of our listeners that they may be in one of those counties that does not have an association. Mm-hmm. So if those folks, they don't have a county association, but they want to still support and they want to be a member of the Kentucky Cattlemen's Association. So can those folks join just the state, or do you have to be involved at a county level to be a member of the state association?
I'm pretty sure there is an opportunity there where they can join at the state level, even though they don't have a county chapter. We would love to meet and talk with them and see if they've got a handful of people that want to put a chapter together. Mm-hmm. And really and truthfully, I know it sounds like a lot of work, but it doesn't have to be. You know, it mm-hmm. can be as big and active as you want it to be, or it can be as, you know, small. And, you know, if you only have a handful of producers mm-hmm. in the county that want to have that connection, and, you know, they can do that too. Mm-hmm. So there's really no requirement there as far as putting a county chapter together, and their state level support, you know, to help with any of that.
And I know even in ours, in our association, you know, we have a few members in ours that actually live in a different county.
Right.
But they kind of associate themselves with Webster County. They may just live outside of the Webster County line, or, you know, or maybe they was from Webster County and then they moved to a neighboring county, but they still call Webster County home. And they can be members of our association, even though they aren't, you know, living in Webster County too.
Right.
And so
right.
I guess that would be an option for some of those counties too. I guess that would be up in how the county has their bylaws and things set up.
I don't know of any county that discriminates yeah. against, you know, neighbors yeah. being members. I think in the beginning we had some people maybe that lived in Union County here yeah. that had a farm in Webster County
yes.
and they come over here or vice versa. I don't remember yeah. which way it was. But, you know, so I think it's a very inclusive organization. You know, we're always looking for people that want to be involved and help with the focus vision mm-hmm. of the organization, and there's always a job to be done if somebody's really willing to step up. So.
And honestly, if you're one of our listeners and you don't even own a cow, but you have an interest in that, you can be a member of the Cattlemen's Association and not actually own livestock.
Yes.
Because it takes, you know, you don't have to be physically farming. I'll use myself as an example. I don't have cattle, but I've been a member of our Cattlemen's Association for, I guess, since the beginning. And you know, our children were junior members and we don't have livestock, but we do have interest in the organization and even at the state level. So
there's a lot of counties that have, whether they call them associate members or business right. members, whatever mm-hmm. they want to call them, that may be supporting, you know, it could be feed stores, it could be extension yeah. personnel, whatever that's involved in some way, you know, that's part of their membership base.
Yeah.
And they're involved in the local association, you yeah. know, and the work. And
when I transferred from Christian County to Hopkins County, you know, I just expected that to change just like everything else. And my former president, who's very, very active in Christian County, called me and said, you hadn't paid your dues. And I said, yeah, I have. I said, I've paid them in Hopkins County. And he said, you have not sent me a check. He said, I want one from you.
So you'd participate in multiple counties.
That's exactly right. Yeah. When you move, you don't necessarily leave. That's kind of the case there. But, you know, the thing about it is, when I think about my career in extension, from Callaway to Christian to Hopkins counties, the three different cattlemen's associations, or like in Hopkins County, it's the Livestock Association. They encompass more than just beef cattle. They have been some of my most ardent supporters in everything that I've done. They want to be involved. They want to be active. For a young agent coming into a county, or even in my case now, I'm not young, but I was a new agent coming into Hopkins. Those were some of the first people that reached out to me to get me involved, to get me indoctrinated into the county and to meeting people. Mm-hmm. And that's just wonderful. I don't know that there's a better representative of everyday production agriculture than our local cattlemen's associations.
You know, and I will say, I think we're pretty fortunate in Webster County. We've got a rather young board mm-hmm. and group of members.
Yeah.
And as you travel across the state and different parts of the country, you know, I've been in meetings where that wasn't necessarily the case. And that's a little, I'm not going to say it's discouraging, but it's concerning. You know, mm-hmm. how do you get those younger people in those other counties to recognize there's a need there, there's an opportunity there, and step up? And I know everybody's busy today, and children have got ball and whatever mm-hmm. it is. And we only have 24 hours in a day that anybody, but I think getting the younger producers, and this is probably true in all aspects of agriculture, to get involved and is a task we're all looking to try to seek ways mm-hmm. to do a better job of. Because,
I agree. And I think too that, you know, just, and we'll talk a little bit more about your role in the, you know, in the Red Angus Association as well, but I think it's good for some of our younger folks and our younger members to talk to people like you and some others that have taken on some of these bigger roles and actually sit down and have a conversation with them and for them to see that it's important to be involved in whatever level that they feel like they can do at that time. And And maybe right now, when they have small children, they can't serve out that state level, but they can still serve at the county level.
Exactly.
And learning that it's not, you've got to do it right now. I mean, just like you said, this has been a 20-year process for you to, from where you began to being president-elect.
Right.
You didn't start that at the beginning, you know, but it's just that first step of getting involved on that county level and maybe attending, like maybe the convention and just seeing what all happens and maybe, you know, just having an idea, and it's just seeing that bigger picture.
I know with some of the leadership that I've worked with, both from Cattlemen's Association and other groups as well, one thing that I have noted, a few, I'll call them tenured producers or members, folks who've been around a while, when they noticed that lack of income and leadership potential, I know a group of producers that sat down together and made a list and identified young people that they wanted to see get involved. And they went around and found them a place mm-hmm. before they ever really talked to them. And they said, all right, you know, I know you've got this spot on this board. Call this person and ask them to serve. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you ask them, they'll get involved. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes that's what it takes is somebody identifying that person and finding a way to bring them in. I've seen that work. I know there's a couple of producers I've worked with in the past. I still consider them young producers, even though they're nearing 50. But they had somebody identify them when they were in their early 20s and said, hey, this person needs to start being involved now so that they have that experience when it comes time for it really mean something.
So I've brought this up on a number of occasions in different organizations, but I think in all of our organizations, there's a tendency to forget that we need to be doing just what you said and cultivating the next group of leaders. And most all of these entities have a junior organization mm-hmm. or something of that mm-hmm. nature, but there's a gap when they age out in those organizations and they become old enough to maybe participate on the adult board level mm-hmm. or whatever. And when you lose those, it's harder to get them back involved. And I've suggested numerous times that, you know, even on some of our adult boards, we need to have some junior positions that are just there and available for those younger group of people to get involved earlier and maybe even give them, you know, a voter voice if that's what we've got to do to get them engaged and make it feel like it's worth their time of being mm-hmm. there. But we've definitely got to come up with some ideas. And because, I mean, we all, you know, we have our free time and things we just like to do because we like to do it. But that's not always serving on an organization, you know. Mm-hmm. But we've got to give them a reason to think it's important, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not just something I'm just going doing because, you know, they've made a spot for me. And
you know what? We all hear organizations recruit with that message. Well, this is what we do for you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think some of these young people need to hear, this is what you could help us do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's heard differently than what we do for you.
Right.
And that younger group, especially when we're talking, I think, about trying to relate to the consumer, probably can enlighten some of us older ones on some of the things that's going on in the world, the marketplace, in school, that we don't even know the conversation mm-hmm. has started yet.
Right.
You know, and
I agree.
A few weeks ago, we recorded a podcast with Mr. Burks.
Mm-hmm. Terry?
Braden.
Oh, Braden.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We did Terry too.
Right.
But one of the things that stood out to me with him was he was talking about his involvement in being in FFA and just taking on roles and things. But what one thing that he said was when he was talking about FFA at that point, but he went to something. He said, and it lit a fire in me. Mm-hmm. Those were the words that he said. It lit a fire in me, and from that point on, he was so driven, and that's what he wanted to do.
He
was very passionate about it. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't gotten a chance to listen to that podcast, to any of our listeners, to go back and just listen to that, and you will notice right away how passionate he is about what he's doing.
Right.
And that started by being involved in 4-H, which moved to being involved in FFA. And then he was a state officer in FFA. And he showed livestock. But it started at just getting involved. And it lit a fire under him, and he enjoyed it. And you said at the very beginning, you know, I got into these because I guess I was asked. And you're right, Jay, that's what you were alluding to. A lot of times, it's just asking the person.
Right.
They may even have in the back of their mind they'd like to get involved, but they don't know how to get started. And so I think that's just an important piece of talking about, you know, carrying a leadership role. It starts at the community level, the county level most of the time, and then moving up from there.
And Braden's done an awesome job with our junior program at Kentucky Cattlemen's, because he has involved not just children that want to show cattle, but production children, even children that don't even own cattle,
yeah.
You know, children that may want to go to vet school. You know, he's done an awesome job, and we're so fortunate to have him, and try to keep him kindly hidden out so nobody else learns about him, but he's awesome. And
well, you can tell he really likes his job, and he's passionate about helping other people, and I think that just speaks of kind of what you've been saying, is just getting involved, and then it just kind of it almost kind of takes care of itself at that point.
Snowballs or stair steps or however you want to put it. You know, one of the things we always do towards the end of these shows is we like to wrap things up with a timely tip. And I had actually sketched something down at the very beginning of this, but I've changed it along the way based on the conversation that we've had. And I think a good timely tip, as we've talked about these young people, we've said it so many times on this show and you hear it other places, but get out and get involved. You know, originally I thought I wanted to advise people to get involved in their local cattlemen's association, and I do. But I also want them to look at maybe opportunities with their local Farm Bureau board.
Exactly.
With young farmers, with their conservation districts. I feel like if you want to get involved and you want to be able to add something to an organization, there's an organization out there that has a place for you.
And what those people also need to be thinking about, it's not just about them. It's not about the people that's in charge right now. It's about their children, even if they don't have children right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want my grandchildren, my granddaughters, to be able to continue to raise livestock and cattle and horses and whatever it may be they want to do. But we've all got to kindly be involved in that process to ensure that that's available to them when they get to the point that they want to do that.
Absolutely.
And
I agree. And I'm going to say, I'm going to challenge folks to be intentional about reaching out to those young folks about and talking them to them about taking on a leadership role.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it might, like you said, it might be at the County Extension Council.
There is
but be intentional about talking to them. Our leaders, if you know, the leadership that we have in our counties, those folks, be intentional about talking to some of our younger folks.
And don't just do it to give it lip service.
That's right.
Make it mean something for them, not just for the organization, but for those that's being involved as well. Because I think if they truly know that they've got a voice that's being heard, there's a lot of them out there that's willing to help.
That's what I meant by changing that message. There are a lot of people that respond more readily to, you know, we need your help with this.
Right.
Than this is what we do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both are good messages, because we need to know what our associations are out there working on our behalf for.
And
but I've known a lot of people that's what ultimately pushed them over the edge and getting them involved is they realized they actually could contribute. Mm-hmm. There was a spot that needed filling.
If I've got time, I'll throw one quick thing in there. And this applies to Farm Bureau, Kentucky Cattlemen's, NCBA, National Cattlemen's, whatever level it is. You always hear people say, well, what are they doing for me? What do I get out of my membership? And the one thing that I want everybody to stop and think about is, how much time do you as an individual spend in Washington, D.C. or Frankfort, Kentucky? How much time do you spend reading bills that come before Congress?
Mm.
Probably, if you're like me, it's not a lot. And you'd be scared to death if you did. But that's what all of these organizations have going for them, is they have people on staff that are up there every day walking those halls of Congress, looking for opportunities in laws that are coming out to protect us as producers so we can continue doing what we do.
That's right.
And there's so much that kindly they do that you never hear about, because there's things that they get stopped before they ever get, you know, to bills or to laws. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity they have to meet with the different legislatures and work mm-hmm. that they do. We can't do that on an individual basis as everybody, but as an organization, as a group, and with the people that we have on staff, they're able to walk in there and do that for us and mm-hmm. give us the ability to do what we like to do, be out okay. there driving a tractor, putting up hay, feeding cows in knee-deep mud in the wintertime, you know, all those neat kind of things. So
being out when it's really cold.
Yeah. So, you know, it is important, I think, to be involved yes. in all of those organizations.
And I agree.
So, well, we certainly appreciate you coming in and sitting down with us, sir. We appreciate all the things you've done for us. We've held field days at your place, and probably will again for it.
You're always welcome. Yes. You're always welcome.
We want to say special thanks to Jeff for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.